Hello and welcome to Pop a la Carte number 149. I honestly don't remember when we recorded that. Remember when we used to record like weekly? How did we do that? I really don't know how we did that.
I can't remember when we were.
I should start putting in my little notebook. I should put the date we actually did things and be like, wow, that was a while ago.
Right.
Anyway, I'm Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
And I'm Richard.
And we're going to start with all the television because, like, a lot of things happen. Because it is the beginning of June, so May May always was traditionally when shows ended, even, and I guess it worked out that way, even though we're not in traditional television
right
for the most part anymore. Or at least that's not what anybody cares about anymore.
The age of streaming still had so many shows end in May.
What's sad is, like, you listed all the ones that we should talk about, Richard, and I'm like, I don't watch any of those shows.
I watch every one of them, so it was a very rough week for me. Like, just a lot of sobbing on my end.
Oh, you have... Do you have a ranking of the best finale to the worst finale?
Oh, yes. Well, the bottom, we'll get to later because we're going to talk about it, but The Flash was awful, and I'm going to have a lot of things to say about that later. But then after that was, you know, by a substantial margin, Barry, you know, that ended. And that was a good finale. Definitely not what I was expecting, but overall a very good show. Does feel like Bill Hader kind of ran out of interest halfway through.
Oh, no.
But he still delivered a very good show. Third would have to be Mrs. Maisel. And again, this just because it's third didn't mean I didn't love it. I love Mrs. Maisel. That, for some reason, was like, that's definitely a show I'm going to be revisiting a lot because I just like the sound of it. And
the sound of it is exactly what I know because I watched it via my roommate playing it and thus me just hearing it happen.
That's a good way to, like, now if you watch it, like, you'll be amazed because, first of all, it's amazing how apparently in the 60s we just invented style and we just got rid of it, you know. Like, there was a part in an airport when I was like, God, airports are just, like, so nice. Mm-hmm. What happened to us? and then after that, it would be like, it's honestly a toss-up between Succession and Ted Lasso. Succession is, like, I'm going to give Succession number two just because it was so good and it, like, kind of left me haunted. But the reason Ted Lasso gets to number one is I watched it and I rewatched it the next day. Both times I like kind of teared up and I was like, immediately I was like, I'm going to rewatch the show. And it, Ted Lasso, like the finale to me solidified as like top 10 favorite shows of all time.
Ted Lasso was a very satisfying ending. And it was funny because right before that, like there was like, that was like the one show they didn't send screener, like the one episode they didn't send screeners for. And then therefore I did not watch it when it actually aired because I was busy or whatever, but I saw on Twitter people being mad about the ending.
Yeah, I saw a lot of,
I'm coming for you. So I was concerned, but then I watched it and I was like, everything I think ended in a satisfying way. Like even the stuff that didn't go the way that I wanted to, it's not like it couldn't later off screen. And also it's not like there was a strong justification for why it had to be the way that I wanted it. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
What they chose was still fine. So I liked it. I was satisfied with everyone's arcs, etc. And I also did, shed some tears.
Oh, well, the second the father and son from Cats Even Tit, I was just like, oh, we're in it now. this is a cheap play, but it works. Also, Yellow Jackets had its season finale this week. So seriously,
sure did. And you know what? I'm gonna say it. Coach Ben was right. He should have. He was only wrong because he failed.
you're like, I respect, I you did the right thing, but you did it so wrong.
Exactly.
I still can't decide if I, like, now that I'm already two seasons in and I haven't watched it, if I should just wait until the end of that show, because, like, I see people complaining about the cliffhangers.
No, you should definitely do it, because the whole point is to then, you know, nail-bite over the cliffhangers and, like, discuss the theory and then be disappointed by what it actually was.
Yeah.
It's no fun if you just get disappointed by what it was without the part in between.
Yeah, without the year-long
of,
like...
shows like that is the theorizing and then being wrong.
Yeah. And it's still good. Like, I mean, season one is just impeccable. And, like, you could just watch season one and stop and just, and then wait until the end if you want to. But you should definitely watch season one immediately. Season two is still very good. I still love all the characters, except for when I want them to burn alive. But I would say, like, you know, there's always going to be more. As the show goes on, there's always more things you're going to be displeased by. So,
this yeah,
it's true.
Still good, though. Still love it.
Well, part of the problem for me is, like, there's so many shows that I was, like, so freaking hyped for mm-hmm. that, like, this kind of makes me think about where I never finished the show.
Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
done. And I still haven't finished them.
Like what?
Man in the High Castle, Mr. Robot, Orphan Black. I could keep going.
You got
those are the three that come to mind off the top of my head.
I mean, you have time now that one of your favorites has been sadly canceled.
I have to stop. Netflix has just, it's not fair. And I've seen all these things where people are like, well, they don't cancel any more shows than anybody else does. And I'm like, yeah, but they keep giving me genre shows that I'm like, these are great. And then those are the shows they cancel.
But also no one is making shows at the number of shows that Netflix is making. So they're they're making more shows than they like have anything to like. I don't know why I lost my train of thought. Yeah, they're making more shows than any other network is. So they are just flooding the marketplace. And so, of course, like, yeah, obviously maybe by numbers, you know, it's comparable to Disney, which Disney is going through a lot of awful stuff right now. But also they're not as greenlighting as much stuff. Like Netflix has a new show and a new movie every week that are cannibalizing their marketplace.
Which is part of the reason nothing can get any traction. Because it's like, okay, well, and especially because they only care about their first like what 24 hours, and it's like, I'm sorry, I have a life and I'm doing multiple jobs. I don't necessarily have time to watch something in within 24 hours of it dropping. That doesn't mean I don't like it, but you know, like I obviously talked about it a lot, 1899, we couldn't watch it right away, but I watched it like three times in the first 2 weeks, but that doesn't matter to them.
Yeah,
so yeah, they now canceled Lockwood and Co., which was from Joe Cornish of Attack the Block fame.
Oh.
And it was so good. I mean, the only good thing about it is at least there's books, so I could go read the books to find out what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was a really fun show. And it was a good, like, young adult show. And it's just, yeah, it's just so disappointing because that is the third big show that I've been into in the last year on Netflix that they canceled.
Right. It makes me wonder what, like, the threshold really is. Because it feels like the cancel shows that it seems like are doing very, like, that have a lot of public recognition. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And obviously you can't really be counting by, like, how many new subscribers each show has brought in.
Yeah.
Because they release too many to even be able to keep track of that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
It's like, you know, I'm not sure that any of them would really, like, you know, you can't say that anybody would actually want to take those shows on, but without them releasing any kind of numbers, how would a studio ever or a network ever know if they wanted to maybe take over a show that Netflix wasn't willing to go with because they don't know how many people are actually watching anything.
Right.
And I mean, that seems to be like one of the major like sticking points of the writer's strike is that, you know, these people, we don't know, you know, how well a show is performing. And, you know, this is data that is being kept from many of the creatives involved as well. So it's like, they can't even point to it as a metric of success.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's like, you know, for all we know, you know, we don't know how these series are actually performing. You know, it's all just kind of like the only ones we can track are obviously ones that placed in the Netflix top 10, but like, you know, obviously Wednesday was going to do well because it was like a big property from a big director. But, like, you know, we can't track the performance of, you know, of smaller shows like that, that Netflix is producing. Like, I would love to.
What's weird is when things do show up in their top 10 and they still get canceled. Because 1899 was really high up there worldwide for a while, even with Wednesday having come out like 4 days later and obviously taking the top spot. And it still got canceled. And then, yeah, it's just, and Sandman, how close was that to getting canceled? And wasn't it fairly high up there for weeks?
Yes, and it took them a long time to, like, officially renew Sandman. Like,
yeah.
And, yeah, because, like, I think the only reason, like, say, Cobra Kai has lasted as long as it did is, obviously, it has a big fan base, but also because I think when Netflix purchased it from, like, YouTube Red or whatever, they probably realized, all right, the numbers are there, you know, we can, like, you know, it's a certain number of season renewal, probably doesn't cost that much to make.
Right. Yeah. Cost. The cost is a big thing, too, because, like, they keep going, like, ambitious and expensive. For what reason? If you're going to get the same viewership from, you know, something that's very, like, relatively low budget with, like, a relatively unknown cast or whatever, then what's the point of shelling out millions and millions for certain people and big, big sets and CGI and whatever, and in the end they're going to have the same viewership and you're going to want to cancel the more expensive one? It's like, why?
Yep. It's infuriating. And I mean, I do admit that, like, the shows that I'm, because they're genre, so genre tends to have CGI or special effects that, like, cost more. So I get that, but it's like, well, yeah, but we still don't know what your threshold is. Like,
right.
And then stop making those shows. Just stop making them, then.
Yeah.
Don't get me invested in things that you're just going to cancel.
Yeah. Angela is not here for K-Drama Corner, but I will say that Netflix also ruined the K-Drama industry.
Oh, no.
Because, like, shows will get really big on Netflix, and then in Korea, they won't watch it live anymore. They'll just wait for Netflix or just watch the ones that are on Netflix because they can binge them. And people get big on Netflix, their prices go up, but the viewership doesn't actually go up. So then Korean shows don't actually make money back. Now they've gotten rid of all their Wednesday, Thursday slots for dramas. So now, like, 80 dramas don't have a home in Korea for 2023 because of low ratings, because of Netflix.
Yeah. Lame.
Yes.
Yeah. They ruin everything. Remember when we used to like them because they were saving shows that had been canceled? And now it's like, yeah, no, now you just ruin everything.
Yeah, now it's Hulu of all places that's, like, the show, like, revival. Like, they're the ones that are doing all the content, like, maybe not saving shows, but, like, reviving them. Mm. Like, Animaniacs and Futurama and stuff like that. Right.
Although nobody has Hulu, apparently, because they keep then having to cancel those shows because nobody's watching them.
Poor Hulu.
I know.
Yeah, because they pulled Dollface from there. I'm still mad about that.
Did they?
Yeah, Disney pulled, that was one of the many projects that Disney pulled, which I was like, this is outrageous. First of all, pulling anything is awful.
It's super gross, yeah.
Did you guys see all of the stuff that Disney, like, not only pulled, but, like, some of the people they fired over the week?
I've seen some, but, like, we rushed to watch, what was it called? Just Beyond, which was a R.L. Stine young adult show that was on Disney Plus. We rushed to watch that just before it was pulled. And that was really cute. Like, it was a good, like, young show.
There was a lot.
Never even heard of it until Matt was like, "Hey, we should watch this." And McKenna Grace did an episode, and I was like, "All right."
Yeah, because they just removed, because a lot of the stuff that Disney released was just, like, kind of like their mid budget. Like, unless it's a Marvel or a Star Wars show, you know, they don't really market it. So, like, there were plenty of good movies that were on Disney Plus. You know, like the one and only Ivan, I thought was really cute, and just a bunch of programming that it's sad that it went.
I can't believe they took Willow off.
That's awful, yeah.
And they also took that new National Treasure off. So literally there are two shows that they aired over Christmas.
Yeah. Oh my god. And that's like they took it off in less than a year later. That's terrible. They really were just like flop by wow.
And the worst part is, you know, because nobody really has physical media anymore. That's it. It's gone. Unless you pirate it, which is illegal. But can you blame people?
I mean, at this point, like, it's not really, it doesn't, it, I don't know. There's the, you know, obviously piracy is bad, but if this stuff is not going to be available to the public, then, you know, there is an ethical argument to be made about preserving it. Because it's like, you know, people should be, you know, the creatives who made Willow should be able to show their product, their creation to the people, you know, to people. Same with all of this stuff. Just Disney has been really taking a page from David Zaslav, you know, because, like, they laid off so many high profile people. They fired the woman who saved Toy Story 2. Have you guys heard that story?
Oh my god, no, I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah, the woman who had it on her laptop because she was on maternity leave?
Yeah, so she was one of the main producers on Lightyear, and she and the director of Lightyear were let go by Pixar during Disney's massive layoffs.
Wow.
And both of them had been with the company since, I think, at least Bug's Life, maybe Toy Story. So, wow. Like, after all these years, I was like, I could not believe that. I was like, that's, how do you fire the person who basically saved, you know, the movie, one of your movies?
Right.
As a Disney stockholder, I do not approve. That I own a lot of stock. I own like 3 stock, but
call Bob. Call Bob Iger up right now. Put him on the put him on the pod. Bob, what do you have to say for yourself?
Yeah. No, that sucks. Because everybody's heard that story.
Yeah.
Like, she saved the movie.
Yeah. She saved arguably one of the greatest movies of all time. Like, you know, that's insane. And I'm sorry, look, I know I'm the only person who saw and liked Lightyear, apparently, I saw it 3 times, but it's just ridiculous to me that, like, okay, this one movie apparently seems to have set, like, a cascade at Pixar, which I was like, you know.
Yeah, that's BS.
Yeah.
There's, other reasons it didn't get promoted, right? A lot of people didn't know what it was. Yeah. And people weren't necessarily ready to go back to the theaters. I still hardly go.
Yeah, I'm still. Yeah, it's, you didn't even go see Top Gun Maverick. Like, if you weren't going to see Top Gun Maverick, you weren't going to see Lightyear.
Right. Top Gun Maverick's so good, though. But yes, I don't know. I just think it's crazy that it just feels like they're like, oh, we have to change up our whole game because of this. And that their first change up is always to cut people and destroy creative efforts and, you know, make back money in tax breaks, which, can the government change this? Like, why is this a thing? Why is eliminating something you already created? It already exists and all you're doing is deleting it. Why do you get $1 billion back for that?
Also, can I do that? If I make a mess up, can I write that off on my taxes?
I have some stuff like I shouldn't have bought that I could just destroy.
Yeah, exactly. Can I do that? Be like, I shouldn't like,
you know, I burned down my house. Please give me money back.
There you go.
Or also, like, you know how many, like, restaurants I've gone to and, like, I don't like this food. Can I write that off on my taxes? Like, you know, it was a disappointment, you know. I only borrowed it anyway.
Yeah, you vomit it on a plate, you send that plate to the IRS, and you get $1 billion.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, one of the things we didn't talk about, because obviously it's only been announced in the last month, is that, you know, they're pulling down Galactic Star Cruiser, the Star Wars themed hotel that they built.
Yeah, that,
and you know, everybody's like, oh, they can retheme, and I'm like, no, guys, to get the tax write off, they have to raise it to the ground.
Also, like,
yeah, it's being destroyed.
Was anybody shocked that a hotel that is basically a giant, you know, cosplay convention that cost more than a round trip ticket to Europe was gonna fail?
Seriously, like, do you know how good it wouldn't be the, like, amazing trip, but I could get you a pretty damn good trip to Europe on what that thing costs for 2 nights.
Yeah, and look, I love Star Wars, but I would probably like to see the real world more than, you know, basically, and again, for the price I'm paying, like, I want Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver to carry my luggage to my room for me. Like, you know, what?
And the other thing is, okay, I understand that they're trying to push the sequels, but most of the people who are going to Galactic Star Cruiser who have that kind of disposable income are the age that they would rather it be. Even the prequels would have been better.
Right.
But really what people wanted was the original trilogy.
See, even if it was the original trilogy, I don't think that would have made a difference.
I think it would have lasted a little bit longer. I think it still would have failed.
I just didn't think that, like, the people who have that kind of money, like, most of the fan base, like, the people who would want to go to a Star Wars hotel cannot afford that much. Like, that's the type of money that's reserved for people who, you know, can vacation in the south of, you know, the south of France, you know.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, that's not like I'm gonna go to a theme park and go to the, you know, Star Wars themed hotel kind of, you know, crowd. They should have, you know, they needed to cater to, you know, a crowd of people who could likely afford it, and they just didn't. And
yeah, I mean, I most of the people I like, 80% of my friends I know from the Star Wars line. These are people who will go to conventions and all of the, like, crazy Star Wars stuff, and they line up for 6 weeks with the Chinese. Like, I'm not kidding. These are crazy Star Wars fans. And 3 people I know actually went to Galactic Star Cruiser. And it was a couple and one other friend, and they left their kids behind, and they shared a room. Because that's the only way they could afford it.
Yeah, that's not the ideal. And again, the fact that you have to leave your kids behind at what is essentially a child's destination, like as a soon to be 29-year-old who's about to go to Disneyland in 2 days, I still figure that, this is primarily a children's thing first,
You would think so, but not so much. I mean, for the most part, your kids aren't going to appreciate that. That's too much money to spend on your child.
That whole thing was just a gigantic mess up on Disney's part. And
I mean, to be fair, the couple that went tried, when it was announced that it was being pulled down, they tried to get a room to then take their kids because they were like, they did love it enough. And then they were like, okay, we should do this. But they weren't able to get, because obviously it's so, they must have to do it by the end of this year, because they're only going through the end of September. And they obviously could have kept running it because there was demand, because now you're taking it away.
Yeah.
But they haven't extended it, which means they've got to destroy the entire building by the end of this year to get the tax credit. I'm sure that's what it is. The story is that people tried to get Iger to agree to like rebranding it, and he was just like, no, we're just taking it down, we're taking the write off. Which, I mean, it's only like 1,000 rooms. It's not, it's not big enough for what they really need, and it's a lot of output.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it sounds cool, or I could go to Greece.
Yeah, like, again, I love Star Wars, but I should probably, maybe see France or, Rome before I go see, I don't even know what the Galactic Star Cruiser is supposed to be called. And I should know this. Like, I'm the one person who still, that, moderately enjoys most Star Wars.
You are the one person. I'm sure. I know a few. Not many, but I do know a few. Yeah, no, it's sad to see what they're doing, and what everybody has put into all these things that they're pulling off their streaming services and everything else. Like, and it's, what's weird is we gave WB, well, Discovery, whatever the fuck they call them these days, we gave them crap, and Disney are doing it, and we're like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Disney deserves crap for it too, for sure.
Yeah, they all deserve crap for it. Like, I don't care if you give me Marvel or Star Wars stuff. Like, if you're taking stuff off your platform, that's crummy no matter what. And, oh, they also removed Runaways. I'm gonna vent about that, because Runaways.
Matt told me. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, and I'll make the argument that Runaways is one of the best Marvel shows. Like, even better than most of the Disney Plus series. So the fact that they removed it, I was like, this sucks. This straight up sucks.
They haven't removed Cloak and Dagger, right? Like, that's still.
I don't think so. I think because Cloak and Dagger was Freeform, I think that's, they literally only removed stuff that was from Disney Plus or Hulu.
Okay. Because I was like, I love Cloak and Dagger. And I'll be honest, I never watched the third season of Runaways. Well, actually, did I even finish the second? I don't think I finished the second.
I watched every episode.
I really wanted to watch the part where Cloak and Dagger were in it.
That was a good episode.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we were at least able to bully Disney into keeping the Howard Ashman documentary on there that they were going to take off the same day Little Mermaid came out.
Insane.
Like, I was like, that was like the worst PR I think you could ever do. Like,
yeah. We were all excited when Iger came back, and then he's doing stupid things too.
It's like, I understand he's got to clean up the mess that Chapek left, but like, Bob, come on. You can't do it any better than this?
Yeah, really. There's got to be a better way. There has to be. I don't know. Oh, sad times. All right, so.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of. Obviously we were crabbing on Discovery and Warner's and,
Oh, there you go. There you go. Whole, that's the transition we've been making.
Their whole situation with, rebranding themselves from HBO Max to just Max.
I called it Max last night and Matt was like, no.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
And now what is the show they decided to launch Max with? But like, The Idol, which only one of us watched,
Ugh, yes.
Okay, I literally have no idea what this is.
Okay.
I've seen mention of it, but that's it.
You know Euphoria, right? And all the madness that it brings.
Okay, yes. Okay.
So Sam Levinson, who is the creator of Euphoria, is also the co-creator, I guess. Or not even, whatever. He is the one producing, or whatever, directing, writing, whatever the fuck, The Idol. Along with The Weeknd, Tess Faye.
Oh, Abel Tess Faye. Yes.
Yes.
Now I know.
Yes. So, you know, originally it was supposed to be a look into the darker side of the music industry and entertainment in Hollywood and how it, you know, objectifies and commodifies women's bodies and doesn't give them agency, etc. Right? And okay. There was a woman director, Amy Simetz, I think was her name. So she was removed, apparently because The Weeknd felt that there was too much of a feminist lens, and he did not like that. So he thought maybe it would be much cooler if we could see things from the perspective of his weirdo character, who is like maybe a cult leader, maybe a club owner. I don't understand what he is, but he's definitely going to like make Johnny Depp's child into a real star who's like in tune with her sexy emotions instead of, I don't know, pop manufactured pop or whatever. It's so stupid. It's bad. It's very bad. So anyway, the whole set sounded like a nightmare. They HBO Max, whatever, spent like $75 million on it. And for what reason? And they cast a bunch of people who just cannot act if their life depended on it, starting with Lily Rose Depp, but also like Troy Sivan. Like, why? Why are you here? Jennie from Blackpink, who has like one line in all her scenes because she cannot act.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, who else? Like, whatever. It's just a bunch of people who just cannot act. And then there are like random veterans playing her staff members, like Jane Addams and Hank Azaria and Dan Levy, but they look like they don't know why they're there. they're like in some other show, maybe. Hank Azaria has a really fucking weird Israeli accent. What was the reason? Why?
Oh.
Didn't we just...
You think maybe he would have learned like, exactly. Better after The Simpsons.
Exactly! What are we doing? So, all very bad. Terrible. No good. And also just, you know, like trying to be like quote unquote sexy, but it's just super sleazy and weird. Like the opening sequence, aside from being this like weird ass, montage of her making facial expressions, cause she's in the, you know, photo shoot and it's like close up on facial expressions. And then it like pans out and it's just like her boobs are out, for the photo shoot. But the intimacy coordinator is like, oh no, we can't actually show nipple. We can only show side boob, because of the whatever nudity writer. But no, she wants to show her whole nipple because it's freeing, right? Nudity is obviously empowering. So they lock the intimacy coordinator in the bathroom so that Jesus. They can just shoot her nude. That's like the opening scene. And it's supposed to be like, LOL, silly intimacy coordinator. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. Like,
what a great start. This is, we're off to the races. So the first episode, aside from just being gross, is boring. Weeknd, another man who cannot act, does not know what he is doing, is supposed to be super sexy and, like, compelling, you know? Uh-huh. But one would not know why she thought that he was attractive or she wanted him to come over. And what did he do? Oh, yeah. Aside from, like, choking her, he, like, threw, like, a red coat thing, I don't know what the fuck it was, over her head and was, like, choking her. And then he eventually cuts, like, he takes a knife and cuts a slit in it so that she can breathe at the end. And then he's like, now you can sing. I was like, murder? What's happening? This is so horrible. I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to be. I don't know what the feelings I'm supposed to be feeling were, other than revulsion. So that is what I learned.
Did you watch this willingly or did you have to do it for like...
No, I watched it because the people like, you know, there was an ongoing debate on my timeline between people who were like, this is absolute garbage, and Blackpink fans who were like, oh no, Jennie didn't know. and also, her dancing was really good. And like, this thing that she said that one line and she said it so good, she ate it. And I was like, did she? Did she say the one line good? So I watched 2.5 speed to find out if she said the one line good, and she did not. She really did not. So, but yeah, like there's like a scene where like, Lily Rose Depp is supposed to be dancing for her music video, and she is doing a garbage job because she's a garbage person who's not good at anything. And so then they have Jennie from Blackpink character, whatever her name was, go do it, and she does it, like, better. But if you look at her expression looks like, I really wish I wasn't here, but she shouldn't look like that because she's supposed to be doing a real good job. So I was like, I don't know what's happening. Who told her to make that face? And why didn't they do another take? I don't know. So anyway.
I have to ask, because I haven't watched it, and I have no interest, and I honestly forgot it was on last night until I looked at my Twitter, and I just don't care. But is the... Okay. is The Weeknd really bad in it? Because, like, that one clip they released, like, when the Rolling Stone article came out, it was just really bad. And I was like, is this just a scene in isolation, or is it just he's bad the whole way through?
He's just bad. He's not good. He's not good. He just kind of, like, I don't know, like, kind of monotone, but not, like, in an, like, on-purpose way. Just kind of, like, I don't know what to do with inflections. I don't know how to carry myself. This dialogue is bad, and I don't know how to make it not bad. Like, it's just not, just very bad. It's just very bad. And you'd think that, like, someone must have thought that Sam Levinson was, like, good at directing or casting or whatever, because he just must have lucked out with Euphoria. You know, Euphoria has a great cast who make something good out of something that is also trash. but he then decided to just cast a bunch of influencers and nepo babies and whatnot for the idol. So I guess he just thought that he could make magic with anything, and it turns out that he cannot. And that is what we have learned.
Way to expose your failures.
Yes. Yes.
Your lack of talent. Ouch. So don't watch that.
Yes, don't watch the idol. Don't hate watch. No hate watching.
Yeah, can we stop hate watching things?
I mean,
if,
like,
you're gonna hate watch it, that's when you do it.
Yes. Yes. Do
because
it
because you don't want to give it credit. Like, that stupid Velma. Everybody hate watched it, and it got a second season.
Yep. Yep. So at the very least, don't watch it on HBO Max. Or sorry, Max.
Yeah. You know, Max is HBO. This show isn't good enough to get the HBO label. That's why they dropped it. They were like, we don't want this sullying the HBO brand.
Did you guys see what Peacock, their Twitter, put up the other day?
I did, and I was like, all right, Peacock officially has usurped most other streaming services now.
It just was in response to dropping the HBO, and it just said, we know, it was something like, we know you guys want us to drop the first half of our name. But it's not gonna happen. It was like, you win the internet. Good job. Whoever is working your social media, that was excellent. It's so stupid. Even on, like, the radio, where they're supposed to be kind of impartial, because I'm listening to, like, NPR and stuff, and they're just, like, making fun of it. Because they're just like, why? Why are we doing this? How many names have you had for this stupid streaming service?
What is it? What was it? It was first, like, HBO...
Go.
HBO Go, then HBO Now. Or it was, like, HBO Now and HBO Go, and then HBO Max, and now Max. And... yeah, just there. And then I read something where, like, they were saying the reason they dropped the HBO was because they were like, you know, they wanted to be able to be seen as a platform for families, and parents still don't associate HBO with families, which I was like, okay, I understand that in theory, but I just feel like, you know, HBO Max as a brand was starting to develop more than just HBO.
Yeah.
And because, like, you know, like, does Max sound any better, like, that you want to put on for your kids?
That sounds, no, it definitely does R-rated not. It definitely sounds like Cinemax.
It
or
does.
Something.
It sounds like Cinemax. That's what I was thinking. Like, immediately, and I was like, immediately, like, oh, yeah, just the whole thing. And also, maybe HBO, people would associate your network with children's programming, like HBO Max, if you didn't take off, like, 50% of Sesame Street.
Right, right,
right.
You have the power of the, you know, Big Bird in the palm of your hand, and then you just get rid of half of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, like, couldn't they just call it HBO Discovery? Like, I don't, like, and then you have both there. I don't get it.
Yeah. Or, like, Warner, or just, like, the, you know, Warner's Discovery. Yeah, there's just so many other possibilities. But Max just, like, I also, this is a nitpick that only bothers me. I hate that it's blue. Like, between Disney Plus and Vudu and Prime and Paramount Plus, the thing I liked about HBO Max was the purple made it stand out. It's like, all right, you know, it stands out on a loading screen to Netflix and Hulu. And now it just looks like every other streaming service.
Yes. It's true, though. They're all the same. I don't know. At least it's not Max Plus. I don't know. Trying to find the silver lining.
I mean, that's what's going to be called next year, probably.
Max Plus? Max Plus Plus.
Everybody else does it. That must be how people identify streaming services. There's a plus after it.
Yeah, but they're like, but what was Max? I've never watched the channel Max. I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. The choices that these people make sometimes, you're just like, but why?
Yeah, you're like, how are you billionaires in the first place? It doesn't make any sense.
I know this whole these past two years between Chapek and Zaslav and Musk have just proven us like, wow, you guys are not the captains of industry, you know, that, you know, right. popular media wants us to believe billionaires are. Mm-hmm. You guys are just dumb.
Yep.
Yep. They are very, very stupid.
Oh, jeez.
Talking about stupid. like, here's my terrible transition.
Uh-huh.
So how did the Arrowverse end?
Ugh.
Although I did talk to Tatiana about it, and she was basically pleased that Flash was just over.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I was like, okay, listen, it ended, and nothing imploded. I guess I'm fine. I couldn't have expected anything good from the team that brought us the last three seasons, so whatever.
Yeah, like, I tuned in because obviously, you know, I've been watching The Flash. It's weird for me to think that I've been watching The Flash for, it's been on for almost my entire 20s. So, like,
wow.
It's been like a staple, like it premiered like my junior, like the beginning of my junior year of college.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and obviously the Arrowverse started my freshman year of college. So like, you know, this is something that like has been around for a while. And, you know, I would tune into The Flash all the time. And definitely, yeah, the past couple seasons have been rough. Pretty much what was last season, the one with the Speed Forces or the Forces or whatever? Like,
I think the Forces first showed up in season 7.
Okay.
And then season 8, Iris had the time sickness that was somehow maybe connected to the Forces, and one of the Forces or more came back. But they were just in season 7, the first of the god awful seasons.
Yeah, pretty much once they turned the Speed Force into the Green Lantern Corps, or like the Green Lantern Rings, is when the show started to kind of go downhill.
Yeah.
But I was hoping that, you know, because they obviously were like, okay, this is the end of, you know, I guess everything after Crisis has been kind of a misfire for The Flash. But, like, I was hoping that, okay, you know, this is the last season. They know this is the end of the Arrowverse, you know. Hopefully they're going to do, you know, something kind of nice and kind of meaningful, you know, give it a nice, meaningful end. And, like, the entire season was just kind of awkward. Like, there were some good moments in it, but it felt very, like, it didn't feel very much like the end game that we were building to.
Right.
And I guess it's unfair to expect it to do the closing of all of the Arrowverse. But, like, you did do, like, you brought characters back from, like, Batwoman and Supergirl. And it's, like, you know, so it's, like, it kind of felt like that was the point. And they don't do anything with Legends, which is weird considering that actually ends on a cliffhanger. Whereas, like, Supergirl ended on a very happy note.
Yeah, that's true. They definitely could have done little Legends, but...
Yeah, and then those final four episodes were just such a mess. Like, the epic finale, and it's, like, them trying to bring it back to season 1, and I was just... The entire time I was just sitting there being like, man, why am I just sad? And it's, like, even just the idea that, like okay, I guess I didn't realize I'm not as tuned in with the Flash fandom as I once was. Mm-hmm. I guess Cecile has a lot of hate online, which I don't really, like, I don't really have any hard or strong feelings on Cecile. But it did feel weird to have, like, the Flash's finale be, like, it felt weird to not have, like, a big return for a bunch of characters, like, not to have Cisco back, and I understand for maybe scheduling reasons, but, like, you could have zoomed the actor
exactly
in.
Why not just say what he was up to?
Yeah.
Why is that so hard?
And yeah, just the whole thing. Yeah, and then, like, even, like, bringing in, like, the final villain, like, the bunch of the speedsters felt kind of cheap, and especially how quickly they got taken out, and obviously it was never about them, but just I don't know, I just kind of felt
like, why bring them back for a go round and have that battle be over in, like, 10 seconds. Just dumb.
Or also...
Oh,
I was just going to say, if you're going to do that, then, like, you know, if you're going to bring them back, then maybe that's the moment you bring in a bunch of Arrowverse cameos. Because, like, that would kind of be the overriding thesis is that, like, Barry's journey, he's gained all these friends. Like,
yeah. You
know, that would have been a perfect place to introduce, like, hey, maybe let's get Melissa Benoist back for one scene of Supergirl to, like, lend a hand. Or, you know, let's lend... obviously, I guess Jordan Fisher couldn't do it because he was too busy with Sweeney Todd, which, you know, more power to him. You know, I hear that performance is great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then, like...
That did lead to my favorite part of the finale! Like, the whole, you know, quote-unquote three-part or four-part or whatever it was, where Eddie takes the family photo and he, like, moves, you know, he, like, waves his hand or whatever, and then it becomes him and Iris and the blonde Nora. And I was like, why did you erase Bart? You were like, I can only have one child.
Yeah, I can only have one. I can only have, I can only have one that our budget can afford.
Anyway, that was amazing.
And then, yeah, then the final, this is the finale is like, you know, because like the idea of Barry like sharing his speed, you know, with other speedsters is a good idea in theory, but that's stuff that should have been planted throughout the season. Exactly.
We don't know these people. Who are these people? Why would we care?
Yeah, like I was just going to say, like, those should have been characters that we met, like, maybe in an episode or two throughout the season that, like, you know, kind of could have enforced the idea of Barry, you know, needing to, you know, because that also was just never what the show was about. The show was never about Barry needing to, you know, Barry was never, like, guarding the power. If anything, there are so many speedsters in this universe now. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I don't know. They brought back Wally for that Arrow episode, which I was like, wouldn't it have been more fitting to have him in the finale? Yeah, just as far as like the end of the Arrowverse, it felt like they just didn't know what to do. And it kind of felt like they were obviously restricted by budget, which is, you know, a real thing. But the best way I can say it is I felt the way about the Flash finale that I guess everybody else felt about the Supernatural finale.
I can definitely see that. I mean, I just think in general, like, almost every single season of Eric's, bless his heart, has been hampered by his need to do this weird graphic novel thing, where he's like one story in the first half, and then random episodes that don't connect anything, and then another story in the second half. And it's like, it never has enough time to lead up to anything good, and then the stories don't connect. So, like, why did you do that? So they waited until the second half, or not even the second half, like the last, literally last four episodes of the final season to build up Eddie into Cobalt Blue, a villain that everyone has been waiting for since season one when he died. Like,
yeah.
And then you only have the opportunity to show him as Cobalt Blue in one half of one episode.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Like this, that should have been like pretty much this entire season should have been like you said, his like a thing for like breaking it up into graphic novels. Like, it should have all been one giant epic graphic novel. And, like, his pitch that he, like, revealed that, like, had they done a season 10, I was like, well, why wasn't that just your final season? Like, why wasn't the Blackest Night thing your final season to begin with? Like, why did you wait for a hypothetical? If you knew this was going to be the end, then...
I mean, I think it was, like, it was kind of basically, like, they were not... Like, if Grant had said he wanted to continue, they would have gotten a season 10. It's just that Grant was like, no, I don't want to. And I'm assuming maybe Eric would just thought, oh, I mean, I'll just convince him down the road, right? Like,
yeah.
And no, Grant was like, I continue to not want to.
Season, so he was like, hell no.
Well, because realistically, Grant has been eyeing the exit sign for like 2 years now, but they just keep offering him more money. Yeah. And I guess he just was like, you know what? My house has enough additional wings to it. So that's why, like, everyone who's like, they want him to replace Ezra. I was like, Grant Gustin's, like, now new, like, outgoing voicemail is his phone being dropped into a thing of water anytime someone asks him about being the Flash. Like, that man is so done with this. Like, we're not going to get him back as the Flash for, like, it'll be 15 years before he's like, you know what, maybe I'll do a cameo in the DCUUUU or whatever we're calling it by that point.
Maybe when he needs some time for there to be nostalgia. He's still in the middle of it right now.
Yeah.
Grant, yeah. When we reach maybe the 10-year anniversary of the Arrowverse, you know, maybe we can, maybe he'll be like, or like the 20th anniversary, I guess, is what we'd be heading to. And then he'll be like, you know what, I'll come back for something.
Run away.
Bless his little heart.
There was, you know, usually shows that I had invested that much effort into in the beginning, I might be like, oh, all right, maybe I'll watch the finale. There was never a chance of me watching the finale. I was never interested.
Yeah, it wasn't worth, like, yeah, I wish I liked it better, because I was like, there are some, like, I think Arrow had a good ending. I think Supergirl had a great ending. And it's, you know, disappointing that Black Lightning, you know, Black Lightning ended on its own terms, but like, Batwoman and Legends got canceled. And yeah, it just feels like the CW just kind of like, you know, the Arrowverse series were a casualty of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic and then CW trading ownership and all these changes happening at DC. So it just, you know, for what was essentially the most successful shared universe next to the MCU, which when you think about it, is crazy that it's the Arrowverse. Right,
yeah.
when you say that out loud, that there's actually more hours of story in the Arrowverse than the MCU. Like, that's insane. Like, but like, yeah, just for this to be the ending just feels, I don't know, feels a little weird.
I still think it's funny that somebody pointed out recently, and I had not thought about this, that, like, remember when Grant was announced, and then before he could even start filming, they announced Ezra, and, like, what's his face? Steven was, like, so pissed off.
Yes, yes!
Oh, yeah, well, because they
and
announced...
And now
it's ending
the show has finished, and we're only just going to get the movie.
Like, that's so crazy. That's insane. But it's also just kind of weird to think that, like, yeah, because... I remember, like, they announced the week before the Flash, the week after it premiered on the CW, they were announced, like, we're making a Flash movie, and, you know, the Ezra Miller is going to be the Flash. And I'm thinking, like, God, how are they going to do that? You know, we're going to have a Flash on the air and a Flash in a movie. And then it took 9 years to get this movie off the ground. And the fact that we were able to have an entire television show in the meantime.
So weird. Poor DC. We have to hope, right, that they might get their acts together finally? I don't know.
We gotta hope. I mean, the people are saying that The Flash was a good movie, so there's that.
Yeah. I'm still not holding my breath.
I mean,
so I'm like, I'll watch it, you know, I'm leaving town soon, and I might just wait until I get back. So sometime in July, maybe August. I don't know, we'll see. Might wait till it's on Max.
I mean, you could do a double feature of, if you wait till August, you can do a double feature of that in Blue Beetle.
There you go. Yeah.
Which is funny, because, like, Matt, at least, he's like, you know, that sound looks like kind of fun. I haven't actually watched the trailer for that one.
It does look fun.
George Lopez should be in a lot more superhero movies. It feels weird that we've never put him in one before.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. Are you guys seeing The Flash, like...
No. If I get a screening, which they have been haters, if I do get a screening, I would go to a screening, but...
They have been haters. They have been real haters about getting a screen.
Yeah.
For it.
But yeah, they're doing all kinds of, like, fan screenings.
Yeah. But I don't want to pay for it. That's the thing. Like, I want it to do well in the sense that, like, I don't want the DCU to be dead on arrival. So, like, in that sense, yeah, I'm like, yeah, do well. Like, get us off to a good start. But then I'm like, I don't like this. I feel like I hate that you canned Batgirl for a tax break, but you're pushing The Flash as the greatest movie of our time. Please don't mind that Ezra Miller has done some weird shit. It's still great. I promise. So,
yeah.
the only thing that might make me see it is a Batman movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny how that does work for people, though, because, like, I went to go see Evil Dead with a friend who I guess just does not keep up with any movie news. And when the Flash trailer came on and they showed Michael Keaton, he's like, wait, Keaton's Batman again? And I was like, yeah, he's going to be in this movie. He's like, well, now I kind of want to see The Flash.
Yep. Yeah. They knew what they were doing with that.
Yep.
I will say that The Flash, I saw the newest trailer in IMAX when I went to go see Spider-Verse, and it's probably the best it's ever looked. Like, I've been kind of not as sold on the trailers. I think they've been fine, but there's nothing that's looked that impressive to me. But I will say that the action, at least in an IMAX screening, looks pretty awesome. Like, credit where credit's due. But I mean, I'll go see it. It's funny that if someone had told me that, like, you know, that The Flash would not be one of my most anticipated movies of the summer, I would have said, like, are you crazy? It's, you know, it's The Flash. But just there's just so much else coming this summer that just looks kind of better. And even that week, I'm like, I want to see The Flash, but also, like, I want to see Elemental a little bit more. I want to see Asteroid City a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. I want to see Barbie.
I want to see Oppenheimer. I already got my tickets for Indiana Jones. So, you know, I really, really, really hate saying this, but I really want to see Transformers.
I think the thing Matt's most looking forward to is that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
That looks so good.
It does. Look, I'm really actually kind of sad that I'm going to be out of town that weekend, but he's like, well, I don't need to see it for a screening. And I'm like, no, if you guys want to go see it, you should see it. But I'll be out. Bless. Like, I leave that night, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, sorry. But it looks beautiful. If nothing else, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
But it looks fun.
I also just cannot believe it took us this long to cast actual teenagers. Like, when I first saw the trailer and they started talking, I was like, why do they sound like kids? I was like, oh, wait, they've always been supposed to be kids.
It's like the whole point.
Yeah.
Right there in the name.
Yeah. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is what actual teenagers sound like. And I was like, I feel so old.
Says the almost 29-year-old. Geez.
Look, it feels weird. Like, I had an existential crisis when I saw Shang-Chi and I realized I'm older than him. And when they were like, the new Superman's gonna be like 25, I was like, no.
Stop it. That's hilarious.
Like, I can't be older than Superman.
Welcome to our world. I turn 44 in a month.
Oh.
Birthday. What movie comes out on your birthday? When's your birthday again?
My birthday's the 9th.
The 9th?
So, yeah, I usually get a Marvel movie, but I don't get a Marvel movie this year.
Yeah, you get a Insidious, The Red Door, or if you wait 5 days, you get Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
Oh my goodness.
I don't think I've seen the last, like, 3 Mission Impossible movies. What number are we on now?
This is 7.
I think I saw 2.
You've only seen 2, or you only saw the second one?
No, I think I've seen... Wait, which one did J.J. Abrams first do? Because he's done more than one.
Right? 3.
Okay, so I've seen 3, then. So I've seen the first 3. And that's it.
So pretty much you've missed where most people agree the franchise got good.
Really?
That's kind of funny.
First one.
I mean, the first one's good. The first one, I think the only one that people don't like is the second one. The first one people like, but no one understands the plot of it. The third one is kind of them getting back on track, but they haven't found their voice yet. Ghost Protocol is the one where everyone's like, this is where Mission Impossible becomes Mission Impossible.
Right.
That's what Tom Cruise becomes really obsessed with, these stunts that will kill him.
Oh my goodness.
Well, and like, isn't he like trying to get Oppenheimer and like Barbie off of IMAX screens because he's pissed that it's not going to play for longer
IMAX
screens? And I'm then don't release it in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, he is apparently, from what I understand, because obviously Oppenheimer is locked into IMAX. That's not changing.
It's an IMAX movie.
Yeah, so what Cruise is doing is he's calling to see if they will relinquish other premium format screens like 4DX and Dolby to Mission Impossible. Which,
and they're telling him to fuck off?
Well, I mean, like, the thing is that, like, you know, if we're, like, based off, you know, on Playground Dibs rules, you know, Oppenheimer got there first. They made their release date known earlier. And I just don't understand, like, you know, Paramount pushed this move. Like, Mission Impossible has been delayed so many times because of the pandemic. And I understand why they want to release it in July, but also, like, just release it in mid-August. Like, I know.
Yeah, then you don't have a competition. And you still have people to see it.
Yeah, like, people still want to watch Tom Cruise, you know, do these crazy stunts any time of the year. Like, I know, like, I feel like the whole, like, you know, August is a dead month doesn't apply when, you know, you're a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, I don't get it anymore.
And, I mean, we're going to face a similar issue in November because, like, now that the Marvels has moved, you know, now it's going to be competing with, it'll be the Marvels, Dune and Hunger Games all competing for IMAX screens.
Oh, I forgot the Hunger Games movie is coming out this year. Yeah. I don't know if I need to see that in theater.
I mean, the trailer looks really good. Like,
I haven't actually watched the trailer.
Like, even as someone who, like, is a moderate, like, I don't have a strong, like, Hunger Games, like, interest, like, I don't think, I have no problem with it, but, like, I saw the trailer and I was like, oh man, that looks pretty tight, not gonna lie.
I should watch it then. Yeah, I prefer, it's funny, because I prefer the movies to the books, because she's kind of a whiny bitch. So, I guess I like that better, but they're not great. I think the idea was good, but I don't think they were everything everybody made them out to be. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. So I guess I'm not that excited.
About which one?
About the new Hunger Games.
Like, oh,
I'll see it eventually, but
yeah. I'm excited. I don't know. I even though I have not even read that book, and I agree with you, the books were actually, like, not that great. Like, I feel like I loved Hunger Games, the first book, so much. And then, like, Catching Fire, I was like, okay, I'm ready to see how this concludes. And then the final one was just garbage. And I hated it. And I was so mad. but I've never even tried to read The Ballad of Snakes and Songbirds or Songbirds and Snakes or whatever order it is. Yeah. But I just have, like, I just like Rachel Zegler. I don't know. And yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm excited. And she did the little thing that, like, that Jennifer Lawrence did in the original movie. The curtsy. So I was like, okay, queen, I'm ready. So nostalgia purely is what is driving it. I'm trying to think about whether I should read the book, but I'm like, it's probably not worth it. It's probably, although, you know what? I think I've actually heard people say that that book is better than the Hunger Games trilogy. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't know. Could be.
I don't think I knew it was actually a book. The Lionsgate were just like, hey, we're going to make up a story.
Right? But no, yeah, she did write a book. And I had remembered, the thing is, like, maybe it's because I aged out by the time that book came out. Because I remember hearing that the book's coming out and everyone was talking about it when it was going to come out. And then it came out and I was like, no one has read it. No one is talking about it. That's probably just because I'm an old, you know, an old hag now. And that's probably why. Because when the trailer came out, my timeline was just full of people who were obsessed with that book, who loved that book so much. It's the best book ever. Better than The Hunger Games. I was like, okay. Why didn't you tell me that? Like,
yeah, 5 years where ago. Have you been?
Exactly. So, anyway. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to it, but cautiously, approaching it with caution.
We were supposed to talk about summer movies. Totally.
Right. Oh, well, summer, speaking of, like,
it's because the Marvels got pushed.
Yeah.
And that became the discussion. Because that was supposed to be my July. I mean, it was going to be a late birthday present, but it was supposed to be my July present. My birthday present from Marvel, and then they moved it.
Yeah.
So instead, I get Secret Invasion a few weeks early, which honestly, I mean, it looks better anyway.
True.
But that's the thing I'm actually looking most forward to because it looks really good for the summer. Although I do also want to see Barbie really bad.
Yes. So see, this is what I got to say about Barbie. So Greta Gerwig, I don't know how she does it, but like first she was like, "What if Little Women?" But we actually incorporate the life of Louisa May Alcott and turn Jo's Spencer story into the way that she originally meant it to be before fans and publishers made her change it. It's like mind blown, incredible, show stopping. Yep. I totally would have done this if I had money and ambition. But
in case anyone who hasn't seen Little Women, the 2019 version, you absolutely should because it is a masterpiece.
It is. I love it. And like, if you hate Amy in the book, because you don't understand her dweebish little child self, you will understand her now because of Greta Gerwig.
I was one of those people who hated Amy.
Yeah, exactly. Greta Gerwig did that. So now with Barbie, she said that she was inspired by freaking Reviving Ophelia, which is a like a psychology book, like a child psychology book that I remember reading in my school library when I was 14, and it changed my life. So once again, Greta Gerwig is just plagiarizing my life, but doing it well. So,
your move, Nolan.
Exactly. What do you have for me, Christopher Nolan? We'll see.
What Christopher Nolan has for you is a lot of this.
Someone asked me which I'm going to go see first, and I said, well, that's an easy answer. I said, one's got Gosling and the other one doesn't. So, of course, I'm going to go see the one with the Gos in it. That demands priority.
Well, okay, so I would raise you Cillian Murphy.
Yes, that's what I was saying. Cillian Murphy's what he has.
Don't bring a Murphy to a Gos fight. Don't even try that. They're not even in the same league. That's like throwing out a Squirtle against a Dragonite. Like,
what? You know. Oh my goodness, this is terrible. Okay, I love Cillian Murphy, and I feel like I would, you know, I'm like Cillian Murphy. He means business. This is a serious man. We're getting some acting, but Ryan Gosling's just having a great time. You know, you can't have a great time with the atom bomb. So that's the problem.
If you are, you're probably doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
What you do is you switch them so you have Cillian Murphy play Oppenheimer in Barbie, and then Gosling play Ken in Oppenheimer.
There you go.
to be fair, Ryan Gosling fits into the same category for me as Timberlake and Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears. Of the new class of the Mickey Mouse Club, who then took time away from the people that I liked on the Mickey Mouse Club. So he will always be one of those people. And I kid you not, because I was obsessed with the Mickey Mouse Club. I was that right age.
Wow. Like, so you're right, telling me that you final, did not know how to bet on the winning team.
In yeah, here. That's exactly what I'm hearing. That's literally what basically saying, like, you're basically the person that was like, all right, I can either pick invest in the iPod or the Zune, and you invested in Zune. Yes. All right, I'll take the Apple. You take the Apple stock, I'll take the Enron stock.
I am dating myself that, but yeah. I went and I saw them perform in a freaking Target parking lot once.
Oh my god.
When they tried to rebrand as MMC. I have a
terrible plan.
I have a signed CD somewhere that I think Justin Timberlake signed when he performed with them as a kid.
Really?
So bad. Yes.
That's so cute.
Anyway, so yeah, Gosling will always be one of those. Like, I can't see him as anything but a kid. Even if, yes, I can understand that he's attractive, he's still a child to me. So anyway, but he's a good actor, and I'm sure he's going to be fantastic as Ken. But I don't know. I'll probably
give him the Oscar now.
Yeah, let's be real. I'll probably end up seeing Barbie first, but I do want to see both of them. Mm-hmm. Although it is really hard because, like, fucking Oppenheimer. It's like, okay, I mean, what was it Matt was saying? We were having a discussion about it last night, and Matt, we were trying to figure out. I think it was our friend Corey was saying that, like, he thinks that Nolan has hearing damage.
Oh,
because, like, his mixing, and Matt was just like, no, I think his head's just so far up his ass. That's what he thinks the world sounds like.
Oh my goodness, that's a good one. That's a good one, sir.
Yeah, because seriously, something is wrong with the sound mixes on his movies. Somebody help the man. Stop being yes people. Just be like, no, this sounds bad. It just sounds bad, and we can't hear anything. This is not. Like, you think you're being an auteur, you're just being annoying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. I will still see the movie. What was funny was, like, seeing the... I think it was before Guardians, we saw the Oppenheimer trailer, and that was the first time I had seen it. And I... Like, you... It feels like it should be a miniseries, because you're watching the trailer, and I'm like, there's a lot of people I know are supposed to be in this movie that I have not seen yet. And they only show up in the last part, and they're like, I think this person's in this movie quite a bit, but this is just, maybe he should have pulled a Dune and made it two parts. I don't know.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is 3 hours long, so there will probably be, there's plenty we have not seen. And also, please don't pull a Dune. Please don't stop. Like, that movie's, like, to pull off a Dune, like, even Dune doesn't pull off a Dune. Like, Dune, like, we'll get to that when we talk about Spider-Verse, but, like, yeah, there's half of, like, you know, there's been a lot of half movies this year, it looks like, you know, between Spider-Verse and Fast 10, and now Mission Impossible Part 1, and now Dune Part 2, and it's like, there's a fine line to where this works and where it doesn't, and yeah, no, Dune is one of those movies where I remember sitting there being like, this is only the beginning, and I was like, is it because we've been here 2.5 hours, but also, that's the end of the movie. Nothing's happened.
It's true. At least I knew Dune was two parts when I went in, because there were people in my party who did not.
They
really annoyed. Like, yeah. Corey, I don't think, is seeing the second part. He was really mad.
I mean, I knew that there was going to be, or actually, wasn't it true, though, that, like, he wasn't totally sure there was going to be a second part?
Yeah, no, he didn't
made
know.
Part one. He didn't know if he'd get it. So, like, I knew that was the plan. But I was still, like, the way that it ended was, like, not even on, like, a good cliffhanger. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, like we'll talk about Spider-Verse. That was a cliffhanger. But we were like, whoa, part two is coming. Then Dune was, like, it just ended 0.75%, like, or 75% through a movie. Like, I was like, okay. You could have ended with, like the big betrayal, you know?
You spent all that time on the backstory, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
For the actual story is.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, what an interesting choice. Like, at the very least, you should have ended after the death of, you know, Oscar Isaac or whatever, right? Or, like, the moment of betrayal, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like that, like, big climax, and then you're like, oh shit, what's gonna happen now? But they're like, big climax, what's gonna happen now? Let's see a little bit, a sneak peek of what's gonna happen. Oh, okay, we're starting the next episode. Oh no, Netflix died. It's like, okay. There has been an outage. We cannot continue this episode.
That's a really good way to describe it. Oh, jeez. Yeah. I liked it. But, like, if they'd never released the second half, I probably would have forgotten.
Right. I liked it enough to try to read the book. Did not go well for me, but I tried.
I read the book, and then when I was in Utah, like, in April, you know, we just have, like, old... basically, it's like, when we moved to Blu-ray, we moved all the... when we moved to DVD, all the videos moved out there. And then when we moved to Blu-ray, all the DVDs moved out there. And so I was like, hey, look, it's the Dune miniseries from Sci-Fi from the 90s, or whatever it was. And I was like, oh, I'll watch that. And then I was just really upset because I forgot, like, I realized at the end of it, I was like, crap, we don't have Children of Dune here. I can't keep going. I was like, the whole reason to watch the Dune miniseries is to get to baby James McAvoy.
Oh, yes, baby. James McAvoy is so great in that. I really enjoyed that. I also watched that miniseries because of the movie. And I was into it. I was into it.
There's in the first episode of Children of Dune, the like montage where she Chaney is having the twins. Uh-huh. That song is amazing. I absolutely love that song. Like, I just have it on playlists and I just play it every once in a while.
Oh, nice.
Beautiful song. But yeah, they wanted to make more of it, but you know, Sci-Fi never did. Like, McAvoy was in for years. He kept saying, "I will do it." But I think it gets really weird after that. So.
It does. That's what I've heard. That's what I've heard. Enough.
I mean, he basically turns into a worm, so it's going to get really strange. So, anyway. That was way off topic.
I mean, was it, though? Was it? It's still technically tangentially related to everything.
That's true. It's still movies coming out this year.
Movies coming out this year. It comes back to the Oppenheimer, Mission Impossible, IMAX thing, and it... provides a segue into our one of the movies we need to talk about.
One of the two movies that we're going to end on. Let's do Guardians. We'll do Guardians first because that was the older one.
Yes.
And I don't feel like I have as much to say. Well, I don't know. Anyway, what did you guys think of it?
I really liked it. I thought that it was almost, for the most part, I thought it was a good ending to the trilogy. Gave me, you know, some feel good moments. I definitely wept like a little baby, over the Rocket storyline. Mm-hmm. I think PETA said that it was like the best animal rights movie of the year. Like, yes, I see that.
But is that a good thing? I don't know. When PETA's praising you, I would step back and be like, uh-oh.
But yeah, so I liked that stuff. I think, I thought High Evolutionary was great. I thought he was, a really great villain that I would, you know, be happy to see return in some other form. Yeah, all the backstory stuff for Rocket, super emotional. I think that the Gamora stuff, I was a little, like, I like the concept that she's, like, found her own family or whatever, mm-hmm. but I don't know that was, like, earned. Like, I was like, why can't she just come back to Guardians? Why did they send her the Ravagers? So I would have
liked... that was weird.
I would have liked some more conclusion, if not for her and PETA, which I feel like the reason is because I know Zoe Saldana is done for good versus they could bring Chris Pratt back. So maybe they don't want to have him tied to Gamora. I guess I get it, quote unquote, even though I don't like that. Why not just have them get back together and then just say she's off doing something else with the Ravagers? Who cares? But also there should have been more for Gamora and Nebula as sisters instead of just like nodding at each other or whatever. It's like, okay. What else? The part where I'm trying to think, like, I think that maybe the issue with it was like it was too long. I was like really good. I was really into it. And then I think it was like at the point that Rocket, you know, died and then came back. I thought that the movie was like about to end, right? I was like, wow, that was so good. And then I looked down and I was like, nope, there's still half an hour left. What is supposed to happen after this? And part of that too was like the Adam Warlock. He's so adorable. I've loved Will Poulter since he was a little bully child in Son of Rambo, a movie nobody knows exists but me. but I just feel like he wasn't, like, it didn't connect to me. Like, I was like, oh, this is some creation of High Evolutionaries. Like, I get that, but I don't feel like his arc was not of interest to me. Mm-hmm. It was just, like, a fun little addition, I guess, but they took up a lot of time, so. So yeah, I think that's overall my thoughts. I feel like, oh, also really hated, like, I loved that Star-Lord went back and met with his grandfather. That was super great. And they, like, reconnected. And then right after that, it says Star-Lord will return. And I was like, why? Why did you just ruin it? This is nice. Now he's on Earth. He's with his family. Everyone has found their family. And then you're like, no, actually, just kidding. He will be back. I was like, okay, whatever.
What if it was a Disney Plus series of just Star-Lord having to reacquaint himself with Earth? Like, he has to go to the DMV. Like, that feels like... that's the only way I want Star-Lord to return. It's just various...
Yeah, I might watch that.
It's basically those, like, Forky Ask a Question videos on Disney Plus, but with Star-Lord.
Where would you guys put this in the ranking of the three? Like, the three Guardians movies, what is your order? 1 to 3.
Guardians 1 is still my fave. And then this one, and then 2, because I really didn't like 2.
This would be my favorite. Then the second, then the first. I think they got better with each one.
Wow. I would put them exactly in the order they are. 1, 2, 3.
Oh. So basically they're all great because we've all got different orders.
Like, I still think the moment, the, you know, like the, because we're the freaking Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever, like, exactly, that's one of the best moments in the MCU, like, so far. So, like, in the first movie. You know, like, how, you know, because we're the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, I love that. Anyway, but yeah, I don't know. I went into this thinking I was going to love it, thinking it was going to be the first MCU movie in a while that I was like, I need to go out and see this more and more. And then I walked out and I was like, okay, next. And I don't know why. Probably part of it was I was confused because they kept making out that it was like this emotional roller coaster, and I was like, well, everybody's gonna die, and then nobody died, and that was weird.
See, I like that. That was the thing I liked the most, that like you didn't need a character to die. Like, I feel like far too often in fiction we like fall back on, well, to make there be stakes, a character has to die, where it felt fitting that the Guardians have a happy ending where everybody lives, and it just, they kind of got to move on with their lives.
Yeah, I agree with this.
Yeah,
go ahead. But I think that they took it all the way, like, Rocket essentially died. Like, there would be no difference between Rocket having died and Rocket not having died, other than me being mad that Rocket was now dead at the end of the movie. Because they still did it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do the Harry Potter thing, where he dies, but he, like, technically doesn't, but he, like, comes back. It's like, right. They can have it both ways, where it's like, he died, but, like, you know, Rocket still gets to live his life. Because I think, looking back, it was kind of weird how we were all kind of like, oh, Rocket's going to die. Like, that had to be how the story ended, where Rocket's story had to be that he learns to basically live, you know. Like, you know, his entire life has been defined since we've known him in the MCU as, like, surrounded by death, you know. Mm-hmm. Basically, he even says in the first one, I don't have that long a lifespan anyway. But it's nice that he gets to, you know, to live, you know, he gets to live, and that they all get to live. That's, you know,
I think part of my problem with it was, like, it does work that, okay, it was surprising to me that nobody died, but it's not, like, upsetting in any way. But it is, like, you spent the whole time being, like, found family and how important this is and blah, 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 and then everybody goes their separate ways. And we pretty much know that nobody's gonna be together again, because, like, we know Zoe's not coming back. We know David's not coming back.
Well,
and it's like, how does that, like, it didn't fit to me.
Well, because I would say that we don't know, like, just because, like, they're not going to be back doesn't mean that, because, like they said, Drax isn't dead. Drax is just living on, you know, this thing. So his story is kind of like, oh, like, Drax is basically just going to live his life on this, you know, on nowhere. Yeah. Same with, like, a bunch of the rest of the characters. So it's like, they'll have lives outside of the movie. It's kind of like as a weird parallel that, you know, I can't believe I'm referencing this, but like how the new how Pokemon ended recently, where it's like Ash is still going on his journey, we're just not following him anymore. And, you know, the idea that, like, you know, because technically, you know, Drax and Nebula are still out nowhere, which is where the Guardians are operating, so there's the assumption that, like, Rocket and Groot will still be, you know, they'll still be hanging out, but they're not going to be working as closely together. And when you think that they've now essentially been together for, the Guardians have been together for on and off 12 years now, you know, I think it's also, I was personally okay with the idea because I thought it was kind of fitting that, you know, they are a found family. Family will still always be there, but they still need to go find their own way. Like, Namantis needs to go on her own, you know, doesn't mean they can't come back to each other, which I'm pretty sure we'll have some type of resolution some that way down the line.
Yeah. I think it also didn't, like, can we stop with the fake out deaths where you really think a character is, like, lost or separated, like, completely? Because, like, Quantumania, I still think, like, I liked Quantumania, but I think that movie would have been 10 times better had they left Ant-Man and the Wasp in the quantum realm. That you leave it there and you don't know if they're going to get out again. And, you know, basically, well, I guess it would have meant Star-Lord died, but it would have been more emotionally impacting had you actually had something like that.
Can we talk, though, that it's extremely funny how Adam Warlock keeps almost dying and doesn't? Like, how he's essentially Rory from Doctor Who. He just keeps, like, no matter what they do, he just keeps coming back. He's like Danny McBride in Pineapple Express, where he just, like, they blew him up, they stabbed him, and he just keeps coming back.
It's like, what? You think that's gonna work? Yeah.
I really did
like what Adam Warlock. He was just, it was weird, but, because it was not really what I expected, but he was fun.
He's a big himbo, which...
Yes, he is a big himbo.
I will say, as someone who hated Adam Warlock in the comics, this is, like, the first time I'm like, oh, this character kind of rules, so... Good job, Marvel. You're 3 for 3 for me as far as taking characters I hate in the comics and make me like them in the movies. So,
who are the other two?
Namor and MODOK. So, in a row. 3 in a row.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hate it. I mean, I liked it. I feel like it didn't... I probably built it up too much because they built it up too much. Or so I walked out and I was just like, okay. That happened. Moving on. And I really expected to be more emotionally invested and in it because I had been before. But I don't know. I think it would have been interesting since, you know, we now know that, like, what, Zoe Saldana wanted to die in the second movie. And they wouldn't let kill her.
Dang. Well, no, what it was that Gunn was originally going to kill Gamora off, and then Kevin Feige's like, is that earned? Which is, I think, Kevin Feige doing kind of like the, you know, kind of the interior designer thing of, like, where you show someone two things and they go with, like, you show them one that you want them to get and then you show them one so ugly that they take the one you want them to get. That was Kevin Feige's way of getting him to save Gamora so they could kill her in Infinity War.
Yeah, so they just kill her later. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Well, and it's like, I have, like, Hot Toys of Gamora and Nebula. I have most of the characters. I don't think I have Mantis or Drax, right? But, like, they're from the other movies. And then this one, they finally get their costume, and I'm like, don't need it. I liked them as their individuals, like, in their own outfits better than when they all become guardians, like, real guardians, and they have their own costume. Just like, nope. I don't know. I feel like I could have been more excited about the movie and I just walked out being like, Like, I actually think there's things about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness that I thought found more compelling than this movie, which is saying something. But again, I've only seen it once and half the time I like the movies better the second time. So, when does it come out on Disney Plus? Do we know that yet?
We don't know yet. We'll go see it right now. What are you doing? Just end the podcast. Bye, everybody. She's got to go see the showing of Guardians 2.
Right now.
Of Guardians 3 right now.
And then we'll come back and record the rest of the podcast.
All right, we're back. And she changed her mind. She was wrong.
Like I said, I didn't hate it. But, like, honestly, I don't think I'm a huge fan of Gunn's writing, which is part of the reason that I'm not excited about... Well, I mean, I'm not a huge Superman fan anyway, but I'm not necessarily excited about him doing Superman because I'm not sure. I think his style is very immature most of the time, and I don't think that's what Superman needs, especially if you're trying to relaunch the DCU or whatever we're gonna... What is it called now? Is it the DCU? It's just the DCU, right?
DCU.
Anyway. So, and I think this movie proved to me that I was like, yeah, I'm just not a really big fan of his writing. And so I'm a little worried. Like, I like his directing, but I think he can be very juvenile with his writing.
It's funny that you
said
that.
That's part of the reason that I like the first Guardians better, is that he wasn't the only writer. Even though he claims he rewrote the whole thing, I don't believe that he wrote. I think there was more of her story in it than...
I agree with this. Just based on the difference between my feelings on the difference between the one and two.
See, it's funny that you say that, because it's actually this one that made me more excited for his Superman. Because, like, I like Gunn's work a lot, but even I was hesitant about him doing Superman, because I was like, you know, the style is just very different. That's a very different type of character. But this is the one I was like, oh, there's, like, a real, like, emotional, like, sincerity here. That, like, each Guardian movie has been a little bit more emotionally sincere than the previous one. And this one, there's, like, a real heart to this one. I was like, oh, he gets Superman. Like, he'll get it. Like, you know, the jokes have always been kind of, like, set dressing. And that's the thing I think Gunn, as a writer, has evolved quite a bit. Because I'm not a big fan of his early stuff. I don't really like Slither. I don't like Super. And I, as someone who still likes the first Guardians a lot, you can still tell there's a little bit of a push and pull between his old writing style and his, you know, what he's morphing into. Whereas I think Guardians 2 and this one especially show that, like, this is kind of Gunn, you know, still kind of having to put up the punk rock, like, you know, vibe, but he's more willing to let it down. There's moments where he's allowing himself to be a lot more open. Just even that, like, final sequence set to Florence and the Machine, which redefined that song for me, by the way. I don't think I'll ever be able to hear that song the same way again.
He's great with music. And also, yes. I do think there's a lot of emotional sincerity. I agree with that. Like, I do think that the third one was very emotional sincere. Maybe I don't remember the second one, because I didn't feel that one was, but this one I agree with 100%. And I do think that he can't do worse with Superman than Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman did. So I'm not that concerned. You know what I mean? It's going to be better than before.
I think after we saw this, I think one of the complaints of our group was that, like, it feels like the plot got in the way of the story he was trying to tell. Like, there was too much of all of the high evolutionary stuff and just, like, the trying to, like, run around on that weird planet with all the animals and all that kind of stuff, when really the story he wanted to tell was just the core and the family story. And it just felt like you couldn't sometimes connect to it because there was just, like, too much flash everywhere.
No, the Flash is going to be in the Superman movie.
That's the other universe that he's in.
I have a question for you both. Okay. In either of your screenings when you saw the movie, were, like, did any kids get upset, like, or, like, start crying, like, during, especially, like, obviously Rocket and, like, you know, the scene where his friends died? Did, like, you notice any, like, crying kids?
I go to the Chinese. There's usually not children there.
Yeah, and I was at a press screening. I don't recall there being that many children, but I didn't hear any crying. I mean, I heard my own crying, so it's possible that I did not hear them over the sound of myself.
Because I know...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, I walked out, and one of the things that I remember saying to people was that was the first time I had seen the Little Mermaid trailer, and I cried more to the Little Mermaid trailer than I did to the movie.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because... I saw Guardians 3 times opening weekend because I loved it. Mm-hmm. And every time I was wondering, like, are kids going to, like, is this a movie that's going to be too intense for kids? Because I know that was kind of a discussion people had about the new Shazam movie, which I didn't think was too intense for kids, you know, but again, I'm not a parent. But this one, I was like, maybe this one is a little more intense. You know, this is more like later years Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But in none of my screenings did any kids cry. But funny enough, when I went to go see The Little Mermaid, there was a scene that made so many kids cry, which I was like, wait, really? This is the scary thing for you guys?
What was the scene?
It's basically, do you remember the scene in the live action one when Ursula turns from her human form into her form on the surface and she, like, does that creepy crawl at the camera?
Oh, so they're like scared.
They do it again in this one, but the way they shoot it, it's not directly, they don't shoot it, like, head on, but they shoot it, like, Ursula moves so quick. She, like, tackles Ariel off a cliff. Where the second she transformed into Ursula and then leaped, there were like 7 kids near me who started crying.
Oh my god, they thought Ariel was gonna die. They thought Ariel was done.
Yeah, so it just, to me, it's one of those things where I just thought it was so funny to me that's like Guardians in my mind would be much more traumatizing to a child.
Yeah, you think so?
Where it's like, I gotta say, I love Little Mermaid. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great live action movie for Disney.
I thought it was fine. I think a lot of people thought I was harsher on it than I meant to, but I was like, I thought it was fine. Like, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but I was like, you know, it's like a middle tier Disney remake, you know?
I loved it. I thought it was the third best Disney remake after Cinderella and Aladdin. Well, that's not true. Obviously, there's, if you go all the way back, but I'm not counting those. I'm not counting, like, Jungle Book and before. I'm counting, like, the recent ones that are garbage.
Okay. I would say you're going to put above, like, Jungle Book and...
No. Jungle Book, that's, like, you know.
Okay, Jungle Book's after Cinderella. That's why I was like, wait a minute.
You're just gonna... But I don't remember that. I only remember the princesses, I guess.
Of the Disney Renaissance ones, I would say it's better than... Definitely better than Lion King and better than Beauty and the Beast. I think I agree with you. I like Aladdin a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. But yes, Jungle Book definitely also at the top. I'm trying to think of what else even came before that. I don't even remember.
I think it was it was Alice in Wonderland, then Maleficent.
Definitely, that's terrible. Garbage.
Yeah, which are both bad. And then Cinderella, which is great.
Yeah, Cinderella's great.
Jungle Book is great. Mm-hmm. Pete's Dragon is great.
Oh, I didn't see Pete's Dragon. That doesn't count for me. Also, I didn't see the animated version either. I didn't realize it was a live action remake of anything. So there you go.
And then after Pete's Dragon, I think it's Beauty and the Beast, and then Christopher Robin, all that stuff. Which I would say Christopher Robin to me is my personal favorite. And then
I also did not go there.
And then Cruella is also really good. And
no,
you didn't like. Oh, that's right. You didn't like Cruella.
I hated
Cruella. You did not like Cruella. I like Cruella a lot more than you did. I remember that. We talked about this last time. And then also Peter Pan and Wendy, which was really good.
Oh, I have not seen Peter Pan and Wendy, so I can't really count.
That's so good.
But I'm glad to hear that it was good.
And then the Maleficent movies are trash.
No, I like the Maleficent movies, but
I won't watch them.
Yeah, and but... I wouldn't count them as I guess technically they're as much of a remake as like Mulan is. So in that sense, they should count, but the second
one is so weird.
Yeah, like, the second one's kind of dumb. The first one I thought was actually pretty good. The second one is not needed. It was not necessary.
The second one is admirable in just like how crazy it is. And yeah. Like, you're just like, someone at Disney like greenlit this and like said like, oh yeah, do this with our most iconic villain. Like, I admire just the cojones on that person.
Yeah.
I just will never get over that you took like your best villain ever, because like she's just evil to be freaking evil, and you were like, oh, but we have to give her a sad tragic backstory that this is why she is evil. Oh, don't you feel sad for her? No. Look, she tried to kill a fucking baby because she wasn't invited to a party. Which they also changed in the movie, by the way, because she doesn't say kill, she says sleep. And it's like, no, the whole point is that Meriwether has to use her wish, because she's the last one, to make it so that it's not kill and she just goes to sleep instead.
Look, Disney spent like 4 years there trying really hard to get the script to basically say we can make Wicked, and you know, between that and Oz the Great and Powerful and Frozen, all within like a year-long period, it was pretty much just a giant audition for Wicked that they never got.
Oh, anyways, tangent. We shouldn't bring down tangents. Because now we're going to talk about the best movie of the year so far, which is Spider-Verse.
Okay, yes.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to be like, are you going to pull a fast one and say Shazam Fury of the Gods?
Hilarious.
Or Super Mario Brothers? I didn't realize you saw it.
No, come on. Spider-Verse was amazing.
It was.
I saw it twice this weekend. That's the first movie I've seen twice in a theater. Well, no, I guess I did see Quantumania twice, but that's just because I'd seen my parents. But Spider-Verse was amazing, and I loved it, and I don't want to wait a year. That's not fair. I don't even know what to say about it except that it was amazing. Although I don't know if you noticed, so Tatiana, the sound was really bad in our screening.
Yes. I was like, what is she saying?
I know, right? At the beginning. Yes. Which it was much better when I saw it last night. We just saw it at some theater down in Orange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before. I saw it again with my friend, and we saw it at the Regal, I think, and the sound was better there. Yeah. So I will say highlight, I mean, obviously like visually it's incredible, although someone that I know said that at his screening they had to stop it because someone had an epileptic seizure from lights.
I was wondering about that, so because
like, yeah,
because my roommate, like, literally when the movie started, because I took him to see it last night, and he like literally the Sony logo comes up and he's like, oh my god, is there a flash warning with this? And I was like, I don't think there was,
but there should be. You're right, That's a really good point. Yeah, they probably should give people warnings, because I could totally see how that could be a problem.
Yeah, no, there's so many flashing lights in the beginning of this movie, and just so many colors. I'm pretty sure like Sony invented colors for this movie. Like, there are colors that did not exist until this movie came out.
Yeah.
So I loved how they did all the different, like, visual styles and the animation. Gwen and Miles, very, very cute. I love all the performances, but Daniel Kaluuya as a punk, cyberpunk.
Hilarious.
Hobie.
Yes,
Hobie. Who's the best character?
That, yes, exactly. Great character. That was so fun. Channeling his, old school skin self. Posh Kenneth came back. So I love all of that. I think I will say the major low light for me is that not only did they not have a sunflower equivalent, it was like they didn't even try. Even though we went to go listen to like the whole album, and like there's like some good songs on there, and like Metro Booming produced all of it for some reason, and they're like Sway Lee, who did Sunflower, is on like two of them. So I was like, okay, there's good music here, but they didn't have a moment to let a song, you know.
Yeah.
Take over, like with Sunflower, which I thought that would be like the first thing you do. So I thought that was weird.
That having been said, though, the end credit song that plays, I'm Still Dreaming, is a absolute banger. And the campaign for it to be nominated for Best Song starts here, ladies and gentlemen.
But yeah, so very good, very good. I had a great time. I also am like you. I'm like, what else to say? Oscar Isaac is a great... I don't know what you would call him. Anti-hero? Villain? Not really a villain.
Antagonist. But,
antagonist? Sure. Antagonist. Yeah. He did a great job with that. What else? What else to say? I really loved the whole, kind of the parents trying to understand what has happened to their child. and thinking that, you know, Gwen is just a really bad influence.
I mean, to be fair, she is. No, I'm kidding.
Spot, I'm not gonna lie to you, I thought it was David Dismalchian for so long.
Did you really?
While I was listening, I was like, is that David Dismalchian? I was like, no, he's not in this movie, right? And then finally in the credits, I was like, oh, it's Jason Schwartzman. Oh my god.
I kept forgetting. I was like, I know this voice. Who is this?
I'm honestly just happy we finally got Jason Schwartzman in a superhero movie. I don't know why, but he's always giving me off the vibes of like someone who should be in one of these.
Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? He was in Scott Pilgrim.
That's not a superhero movie, that's a comic book movie.
It is.
Those are two different things.
That's like, it's a comic. He's a superhero.
I guess.
Scott Pilgrim is a superhero.
Scott Pilgrim isn't a superhero. That's like saying that. That's like saying that
a reluctant superhero. But
that's like saying that History of Violence is a superhero movie.
Road to Perdition. That was also a comic book. That was more like a movie.
Yeah, early 2000s were insane.
They were dark.
But.
So
would you guys say Spider-Punk is your new favorite spider of the ones that they introduced?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Of the new ones. But I did also love, I don't even know what his name was. The Indian one that for some reason reminded me of Danny Rojas.
Oh, yeah. We couldn't remember his name, and then we remembered it last night. Now I can't remember. Pravitter?
Yes.
Spider-Man, India. Mm-hmm.
I feel like the one I want to get more of is Peter Parkcar and Lego Spider-Man.
Peter Parkcar, yes.
Pavitr Prabhakar.
Yes. I loved his segment. And I did. I was so glad at the end that she called all of them, including the ones in the first movie that were randomly like not really in this movie.
Yes.
Because nobody wanted to pay for Nicolas Cage.
You need that moment because I think that's the moment like. I think leaving Spider-Ham and Spider-Man Noir, because obviously Penny has like a small little cameo earlier in the movie, mm-hmm. but like I think like saving Spider-Ham and Spider-Man Noir for like your end reveal was kind of like your equivalent of like Barbossa coming down in Dead Man's Chest. Like you need that like big pop to get everyone pumped. Because obviously you're like, oh, it's the team, you know, from the Spider-Man we've met for this movie. But then when you pull back to reveal the OG crew, it's like, oh, now we're real. And
now we're cooking.
And now you know that means the next movie will have a scene with Spider-Punk and Spider-Ham, which will make it objectively the greatest thing that mankind has ever made. Like, I don't make the rules, but when John Mulaney's Spider-Ham talks to Daniel Kaluuya's Spider-Punk, it will essentially just cure every ailment.
I like it.
And also, you need to have Spider-Ham fight Scarlet Spider in the next one, is my big pitch. Because you need to have one John Mulaney and Andy Samberg have history working alongside each other. But you need the most overtly serious Spider-Man fighting the most comical Spider-Man.
The emo. he was
so good. As someone who, like, obviously, like, they're having such a fun time making fun of overly 90s comics, and like, it was just so perfect.
I can't remember exactly when he thought... Corey was saying that he thought that the movie should have ended at a slightly different place. And Matt pointed out, he's like, no, because this is... They wanted their Empire Strikes Back.
Right, right.
That he's been separated. He's been... Well, now he actually has been taken hostage. Yeah. And you have to get the team together that has to go out and rescue him. And I was like, oh, that's a really good point. And he's like, this is totally their Empire.
It's like, yeah, it's like, it's funny how it's pretty much the same ending as Empire or The Matrix Reloaded or Dead Man's Chest. Like, these sort of two, or even, like, Back to the Future 2. It always kind of ends with, like, them separated and, like, you know, part of the next one will be, you know, trying to get them back together before, like, the big climax.
I just think it's funny that, like, I kept noticing the 42 and the 42 and the 42, and then when they send him to 42, my brain did go, I don't remember that being his world. I thought, wasn't it something else? But I still didn't get, duh, Val, they're telling you they didn't send him that world. I was like, oh, duh.
You're like, wait a minute.
I was like, I should have gotten that. That was dumb. Yeah. Did you notice that Mayday's pajamas had Spider-Ham on them, by the way?
Oh, yeah, I did. I was super cute. I want to imagine Peter had those custom made.
Yeah, those were great. She's adorable, by the way. Although it was weird because her face is so round, I kept thinking, I'm like, she looks like a different kind of animation than her dad. I'm just so confused. There's so many animations in here. I'm like, she looks like she's like frozen modern, like Pixar or something. I don't know. Like, that's computer animation as opposed to drawing. I really like the way with Miguel and Spot, how you can see the pencil, like they leave the pencil drawings.
Oh yeah, I thought that was cool.
I really like that with them. That was cool. I adored the Da Vinci vulture. that was beautiful. Although it was funny. So the first time, I was excited because I actually understood the what he was saying in one part with the Italian. I was like, hey, it's like, it's nothing, right? He says, ciao ragazzi. Like, whatever, it's not a big deal. But the second time I was like, wait a minute, that's the wrong... He uses the plural girls, not girl. So that was like, it's actually wrong. I was excited. I was like, hey, wait a minute. Now I can correct you. But, yeah. No, I love, like, all of the different animation. I love that Donald Glover finally got his moment. That's the problem.
Oh, that was such a good cameo.
That was fantastic. Honestly, like, as much as I love seeing the other Spideys, the other, you know, real Spideys or live action Spideys, that was better. That was to give him his moment, since he petitioned so long to play
Spider-Man himself. Yeah, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I wonder, like, there's like a 90% chance that, like, Toby, Andrew, and Tom are in the third one, right? Like, that's like a...
Yeah.
That's like got to be like the big one. That and Japanese Spider-Man. Who?
Yes, that was the other one. Matt was like, "Where's my Japanese Spider-Man?" With his huge rope.
In his gigantic mech.
Yeah. And Penny could talk to him. She can translate.
I imagine that's gonna be like one of the big moments in the next one. Is that like when they're fighting, like all the spiders are fighting the spot. They like call for more backup and like. The Japanese Spider-Man is one of them, comes in with like his gigantic mech suit and like, you know, because they purposely do show Andrew and Toby's, you know, they show footage of them. So it's like they've got to at least be kind of laying the groundwork. At least like obviously they want to be like, hey, all the Spider-Men are connected. But
yeah,
it would feel like
they also make a point of not having any part where they actually speak.
Yeah. Well, because they use archive footage for it, which is interesting. Yeah. But, you know, if not them, then give a bigger role to Spectacular Spider-Man, because that was nice to see him talk at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would assume that Tom Holland will have a role in the next one. I think part of the reason, like, you wouldn't have done it now, it's still early, you don't need to, but also he's still negotiating to come back. So that's probably going to be part of it is, okay, but you got to do a voice for her, or you're going to, like, appear in the Spider-Verse. And who wouldn't want to? Did you see that, what's it called, Bryce Dallas Howard and Ron Howard posted a picture? She's like, as a fellow, or as a former Gwen Stacy.
Oh, that's
and
cute.
And it's the two of them, like, next to the poster. They had gone to see it, and they're giving a thumb up. They're like, this is, like, the best movie ever made. That's cute. I just saw that today. But yeah, I don't know. I love it. I want more. Oh, did you notice, by the way, we didn't the first time, but Matt pointed this out the second time. Miles's spider sense doesn't work on the Prowler, Miles. He doesn't hear him coming. Or he doesn't sense him coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't even
think maybe because he's like the OG Spider-Man there. I don't know. He still has the phantom spider blood in him.
Yeah, because I'd be curious. I was like, do they register? Like, does Miles register? Like, do you register variants of yourself as a threat to your spider sense? Or, like, I mean, the other explanation is just,
friend.
Yeah, that he might not actually be. Because, like, that's the thing. It's like, if this is a world run by criminals, then, like, it looks like, you know. I'm curious as to be like if the reveal is going to be that like this Prowler is like their this version's like this universe's version of a good guy, quote unquote. He's just, you know, what you call it. He's bad by normal standards, but in a world run by the Sinister Six cartel, you know.
Right, right.
Also, they like the clear. It's funny that they are like kind of coy about like if we're connected to the MCU, even though when Miguel shows, you know, the web of life and destiny right before that, it takes like the form of, you know, he shows the sacred timeline like fracture. Yes. And everything.
I was actually saying, I was like, do you think they changed that after they saw Loki and they were like, shit, that's what we need to make it look like? Because they obviously want them to tie in together.
I also like how they had the cameo with the Mrs. Chen from Venom. And it's funny because, you know, they were like, we don't want to pay for Tom Hardy and nobody wants to call Jared Leto. And no one's going
to choice.
And no one's going to recognize Aaron Taylor Johnson as Kraven yet. So we need to have something moderately recognizable.
I didn't know what it was. I had to like look at one of those, like all the cameos afterwards. And I was like, oh, it's because I've never seen those movies. That's fine. Going back to the Sinister Six cartel and everything. So there's no other superheroes in this universe?
I mean, I guess so, because I guess the logic is, from what my gathering of the movie, is that the Web of Life of Destiny only connects universes with Spider-Man in them. So fragments of the multiverse that don't have a Spider-Man in them are not connected. So, like, the Fox X-Men movies would not be part of this web. Mm. So in the vast multiverse, which would make sense that there are multiverses where there are no, because obviously there were Spider-Man cartoons where there were no superheroes. So yeah. The idea is that Spider-Man and like Toby and Andrew's Spider-Man are in No Way Home clearly established that there are no other superheroes in their universes. So, you know, I guess that's the idea, is that this is a universe where, you know, just there was only a Spider-Man and no Spider-Man. So it's just run by criminals.
Yeah, because, like, we've never heard anything about any other superheroes in Miles' universe either. Or, you know, Gwen's. And it doesn't appear that there's any in Peter B. Parker's universe either. So it's interesting. It's like, okay. These are all the, you know, is Earth 1999 the only one, then, that does have other superheroes?
That's a good question. I mean, it might be, or it might, you know, obviously they'll probably be like the main Marvel, like, you know, no, because they would have to be like, say, like, what you call it, like the Disney Spider-Man, like the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon would probably be considered one with other superheroes in it, because that connects to like the Avengers Assemble cartoon. Mm. So I guess it all just depends on like, you know, there are, I guess, the world where there are multiple superheroes is small and vast.
Mm, yeah.
I say retroactively make the Amazing Spider-Man movies either part of the Venomverse or to 2015's Fantastic Four. Sure, do that. No one cares. And also Punisher Warzone, because R.I.P. Ray Stevenson.
Oh, one of the cameos that I can't remember if it was Matt or Corey suggested last night that should happen is Deadpool. And then he just is like, no, no, I know I kind of look, but no, I'm not.
That would be actually, that would be actually really funny. I would laugh a lot if they did that.
He's like, no, it's wrong. Wrong universe. Yeah, no, something funny like that. Anyway, I liked that when Gwen has Hobie's watch, whatever we want to call it, the portal looks like it changes, so it looks like his differences do. His, like, it was like a ransom note, mm-hmm. is what he looks like, because he's all different newspaper or things. And then nobody wanted to cut it out perfectly, so it's not perfectly shaped around him. But yeah, I like that it actually reflects that it's a different, you know, it's not Miguel's. Because Miguel's actually, if you think about it, the ones that he makes and that everybody uses do really resemble his version of the webs.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So I like that is Hobie's whole appearance. I want to see more of his world.
Yeah, right? That'd be fun.
I doubt we will.
No, sadly. Maybe they'll make spin-off little their own little television show with an episode for each.
Those are the spin-offs we want to see, Sony. Yeah. We don't need to see Kraven and Venom and Madam Web and whatever the hell else you're giving us that don't involve
Hypno-Hustler.
Spider-Man, because they're stupid. But we would watch the other Spider-Man, because that would make sense. That's fine. I like that. Oh, yeah. Now I want to go watch it again. It's so pretty. I'm actually trying to decide if, you know, like, I show this to my parents or if I make them wait until next year, because, like, then they don't have to wait for the cliffhanger.
Oh, true.
Oh, you gotta do the cliffhanger. That's what builds excitement.
It was amazing how many people last night. I mean, at the Chinese, everybody, like, you assume everybody there is really a nerd, so they all know. But yeah. At the movie last night, the people who were like, wait, what?
right. They kind of undercut it, though, with the Miles Morales will be back. And I was like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, got that.
I wish they kind of had, like, a little teaser or, like, something, or, like, a little something there to be like, you know. Or people definitely needed to know the release date, because I had so many people message me literally the next day be like, how long do I have to wait for the next one?
A year.
Well, not even a full year, just 10 months.
Yeah.
When is it now? Is it earlier than I thought? It was this almost the same weekend.
March 29th of next year. It's Easter weekend. Oh,
maybe I misread and I thought it said May 29th because I saw the 29th, but that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I will accept that. Not having to wait a full year. 10 months is not as bad. It's bad, but it's not as bad.
Yeah, it'll be out by the time it's on Blu-ray. They'll already start having the trailers up for the third one.
So the question, Richard, for your screening, actually, and then Tatiana, so you said you saw it again. So I'm curious too. There, when Gwen opened the toy, did everybody gasp?
Oh yeah. Oh my god.
Yes.
Literally, like, it was I've never
It's like physical pain.
Yeah. Like, you could feel the oxygen get sucked out of the room, like, yeah. In one moment. That was like
It was louder at the Chinese, but they still did it last night. Everybody was like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, no. One of my screenings, I think it was the second one, a person audibly shouted, "No!"
I was like, "Why did you do that? Why would you do that to somebody else's toy anyway?"
He's helping him. He's like, she's probably like, it's a foreign idea in her world. It's like, why is it still in the box?
Yeah.
That was so, that's so.
It's just like, oh my God, what did you do?
That's the moment where certain people turned on Gwen very hard and she never redeemed herself in their eyes. that there's gonna be an entire subsection of the internet that makes that like Luke drinking the milk in The Last Jedi. That's their moment. It's like she took the toy out of the box.
Oh god, Luke drinking that milk. That was so gross.
There's gonna be a whole hashtag of people be like, not my Spider-Woman. She would never.
All because of that. Because obviously the real Spider-Woman wouldn't do that.
Jessica Drew will hunt you down, but she will not open your toy.
Anyway. All right. Well, yes. Thank you for telling me that I was like, I had misread the date, because now knowing it's only 10 months, it doesn't hurt as much.
Oh, there you go. Better.
Feels much better. So anyway, all right. So we're at like 2 hours. We should stop.
Yeah, I think it's a good stopping point.
Because let's not get to 2.5.
Yeah.
And I need to go get ready for work.
Yep. So, all right. Enjoy getting ready for work.
All right. And I would like to say we won't wait as long to record our next podcast, but I'm out of town.
Right.
And it's Comic-Con. And I'm,
right. Exactly.
August?
It's going to be a while.
It's probably going to be August.
Are you both going to Comic-Con?
I will be at Comic-Con, yes. Yes.
I might be there also, so.
Oh, nice.
You still have they still not issued your badge?
We should probably end this before we say anything more.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for listening. And you know, we'll be back. As always, follow the podcast. Not that I use half of our social media anymore, which I really should. But the podcast is Pop a la Carte Pod on Facebook and Twitter. I think are the only ones I have that on. And then With an Accent on all the other things. So thank you for joining us. And, you know, next time we should have San Diego Comic-Con covered.
Perfect.
So, all right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.